This is a Faith FM podcast. You're listening to The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen, right across Australia, right here on Faith FM.
Hello there, Faith Experimenters, and welcome to this episode of The Faith Experiment, episode 58. And I'm calling this episode The Cosmic Conspiracy. I'm your host, Robbie Bergen, and it is an absolute pleasure to be on air once again. And I'm so glad you're joining me. Let me know where you're listening to The Faith Experiment today. Text me in 0488 453 11. And, you know, if you've got questions that you would like me to address on this show, or if you have topics that you would love someone to explain, to take a look at from these ancient manuscripts, text your questions in 0488 453 11. And I'm putting together a new mini-series coming up this year, and it's going to be a Q&A session. So if you've got some questions that you would just love to have someone explore, throw them at me. I don't claim to know everything, but I do love to have a good challenge and dig deep into these ancient manuscripts we call the Bible today. Well, if you have missed any episodes of The Faith Experiment, you need to catch up. There's quite a number of them now. Take out your phone, download the Faith FM app from your app store, and under the podcasting section, you will find The Faith Experiment, and you can go right back to episode one and catch up on the story of how I went from a non-believer and became a faith experimenter. You can also follow a whole bunch of different topics on various things where we explore these ancient manuscripts we call the Bible, and we put them in to practice. We experiment with them. Well, on this episode, we'll be looking at the cosmic conspiracy. A conspiracy is defined as a secret plan by a group to do something unlawful or harmful. Now, on this episode, I'll just make sure I don't overpromise and underdeliver. I'm not going to be covering your regular conspiracies that you can find on YouTube or TikTok or any of these platforms. I'm not talking about the conspiracies about Nazis on the moon or who killed JFK or even the Twin Towers. Instead, I'm going to be looking at something which I think is even more interesting than that, a cosmic conspiracy as revealed in the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, over the years, we have had some horrendous things happen in human civilization. And one of those things is World War II and the extermination of about 6 million Jews by the Nazis. And I've got a number of old pictures that I've collected over the years as I went to Germany and visited the torture chambers and the museums and visited some of the concentration camps. There's a picture that has stood out to me. It's a picture of an older lady. You don't see her face. And she's sort of standing side on. And she's just sort of walked, black and white photo, she's walking along. And she's got three little children right next to her as she's walking. And there's a little girl close behind her. All their heads are covered with scarves. They're cold. They, from the photos, they look to be very skinny. And there is a title to the picture, handwritten title, presumably written by a Nazi. These people are in a concentration camp, this old lady, these four little children. And the title on the picture reads, "Off to the gas chambers." When you see a picture like that and you read the title, it really overwhelms you with the absolute depravity that humanity can achieve. The lowest depths of the human heart. It's just, it's horrendous to think that a human being could do that to another human being. I was staying in a hotel recently, in Sydney, I think it was, and I was woken up about 2 or 3 in the morning. And I could hear a lady in the room next to me, absolutely hysterical. She was screaming. She was crying. She was shouting. And it woke me up, and I could hear through these very thin walls that basically she was screaming at her husband, who was on the phone, obviously. And she had apparently found out that her husband had left her for another woman, and she was distraught. There was nothing anyone could say to help her make sense of the world in which she was living. And then you can turn the TV on. You can be watching the cricket on one station, and the next minute there's an ad for feeding hungry children in Africa or India. And we've all seen those images of children who have emaciated bodies and they're dying of starvation. Something doesn't seem right when we're sitting here and everything seems so safe and so well to do. And there's other stories that you have no doubt heard or seen on the news where families traveling happily down the freeway over the course of the Christmas and New Year's, when all of a sudden a drunk driver causes an accident that claims the life of both the mother and the father in the vehicle. When I was not a faith experimenter, before I was a believer in the God of the Bible, I used to have this little pet saying I'd love to throw at religious people. And it went something like this. If your God is so good and so loving and so kind, then why does the world seem so bad most of the time? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why is there so much pain, so much suffering and sorrow in the world today? Now, when I was an atheist, these questions I thought were the perfect ammunition to throw at the believer, the faith experimenter, to show just how ridiculous their belief system was. That they could believe in a loving God, an all-merciful God, such a powerful God, and yet the world in which we live, in which this God is supposed to be supreme, is bad. It's difficult. And it's ugly. Now, on this episode, The Cosmic Conspiracy, we are going to look at these legitimate questions. These are good questions. And perhaps some of you sitting there right now listening to me have the exact same questions. You've stumbled across the podcast and you're wondering, well, what's your answer, Robbie? Why is there so much bad in the world? Where is this good God, this loving God? Some people think that there's no answers to questions like these, but I'll tell you right now from the very beginning, you are wrong. The Bible gives us answers to these questions. Now, these are not easy answers, but they are good, powerful, and even logical answers. Suffering, pain, and death are absolutely, indeed, absolutely, they are terrible. But the biblical manuscripts, the Bible, can give us a compelling context with which to understand these things. And behind it all, we're going to see in this episode, is the heart of God. Crying out with outreached hands, offering a way out, salvation, hope for his people. And that is what we're going to discuss on this topic. If God is so good, then why does the world seem bad most of the time? Now, on this episode, I have a great offer to give you absolutely free. It is a book called Our Great Hope. It is a book that is going to frame the biblical narrative around why bad things happen in a world with a loving God. So stick around for a code word at the end of this episode. But right now, it's time to take a break. We're going to go to a song, Come Jesus Come.
You're listening to The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen, right across Australia, right here on Faith FM. Connect with us via text message on 0488 453 11. That's 0488 453 11. Or send an email to robbie@faithfm.com.au.
Sometimes I fall to my knees and pray. Come, Jesus, come. Let today be the day. Sometimes I feel like I'm gonna break, but I'm holding on to a hope that won't fade.
We've been waiting.
This is The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen. Right across Australia, right here on Faith FM. Listen live or listen later. Get the Faith FM app from your app store today.
Welcome back to The Faith Experiment. This is episode number 58, and that was Come, Jesus, Come. This episode, we're calling it The Cosmic Conspiracy. And before the break, I share with you some real human and raw examples of how bad it can get in our lives here on Earth. The example of the Holocaust, the wife who was cheated on, the starving children, a car crash caused by a drunkard. We live in a world where there is apparent suffering everywhere you turn. In fact, statistically, some of you sitting there right now listening to me are doing it tough. You're facing health crisis. Maybe it's terminal cancer. Maybe you've lost a loved one. You've lost someone to suicide. Life is tough. It's difficult. There's pain. There is suffering. And yet, for the believer, we believe in an all-powerful God, a good God, a loving God, a kind and merciful God. And often there is a disconnect between the God that we understand is in power and the world in which we live. And that is what we're exploring on this episode, The Cosmic Conspiracy. To get into this topic, we want to turn to the first book of the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's called the Book of Genesis. And in chapter 1, we find something truly remarkable. Before we can understand the current condition of our world, which we are very familiar with, we need to first understand the original condition of the world as it came fresh from God's hand. And what was the original condition described in the Book of Genesis? Well, there are seven verses that go to great lengths to tell us what the condition of the created world were like. Without boring you with all the references, there's essentially a description of 7 days of creative acts. This is in Genesis chapter 1, all the way from verse 1 to verse 31. And each time one of the days ends, we see the exact same phrase. You're probably familiar with this and heard this in some sort of depiction of the creative story. After the first creative day, it ends with, "And God saw that it was good." He saw it, and the condition was good. We see the same thing take place after the second day of creation, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. After each day of creation, it says, "And it was good." And God saw what he had created, and it was good. The condition was good. Now, when it comes to the end of the sixth day in Genesis chapter 1, what we find is a slight deviation from the pattern. At the end of the sixth day, after God has created humans, he doesn't say it was good. He says, "And he looked at everything that he had saw in which he had created, and behold, it was very good." So when we look at the creative story, at the end of the creative week, everything that God had made was good, and when he ended with humans, it was described as very good. Now, in some conversations we've had here on The Faith Experiment over the years, I've talked about some of the signs that the world will have before the return of the Messiah, before the return of Jesus Christ. And some of those signs are things like false Christs will appear, false prophets, wars and rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, destructive weather, increasing violence, pleasure-driven society, loss of family values, financial signs, and earthquakes. They're some of the signs the Bible talks about what the world will have before the return of Jesus Christ. Now, what's interesting is that every single one of those signs is not good. It is not very good. In fact, it could be said it's bad, if not very bad. So something has happened. something has changed. In the beginning, it was good. It was very good. But by the time we get down to our part of human history, it is not good and it is not very good. You see, in Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, before the entrance of what we call sin and rebellion, the world was perfect. It was beautiful. It was untainted by death, untainted by disease or pain. There is a perfect couple in perfect love, in a perfect environment with a perfect God. So the question then is, what happened? What happened to change from this perfect couple, perfect love and perfect relationship and perfect environment and perfect God? What changed to what we have here today? A place of pain, suffering, death, disease, where it's the rule and not the exception. I'd like to suggest that as you delve through these ancient manuscripts, especially the portions that have the teachings, the very teachings of the Rabbi Jesus or the Messiah, there is a profound explanation given to help us understand why the world that we live in is so drastically different to the world in which God had created. It's profound. And so we're going to pick this up after the break. We're going to go to the book of Matthew, and we're going to look at the very teachings of Jesus on this point as to why a loving God, a perfect God, a good God could possibly have a world that is so full of pain and suffering and sorrow and death. Don't forget, coming up very soon is the code word to get to today's great giveaway, Our Great Hope, a book on the cosmic conspiracy. Be right back after this on The Faith Experiment.
The Faith Experiment is made possible because of people like you. If you enjoy what we are doing, please consider supporting us by making a donation on our website at faithfm.com.au/donate.
All my words fall short. I've got nothing new. How could I express all my gratitude? I could sing these songs as I often do, but every song must end, and you never do. So I throw up my hands and praise you again.
It's not much, but I'm nothing else.
my soul. Oh, don't you get shy on me, lift up your song. Cause you got a lion inside of those lungs. Get up and praise the Lord. Oh, come on my soul. Oh, don't you get shy on me, lift up your song.
You're listening to The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen, right across Australia, right here on Faith FM.
Welcome back to The Faith Experiment. I'm Robbie Bergen. This is episode 58, and we're calling this episode The Cosmic Conspiracy. We've seen that conspiracies are a secret plot to inflict pain, suffering, and even death. And we have seen before the break some vivid examples of how human suffering and how pain is inflicted, and even death, on a daily basis. It's not a rare thing, it is the normal thing. And I'd like to suggest that as we delve into this cosmic conspiracy, as taught by the ancient manuscripts, there is an explanation as to why we live in a world where there is a good God, a loving God, an all-powerful God, and yet the creation in which we dwell in is anything but. We have a giveaway coming up, Our Great Hope. It's a fantastic book. You want to get this book, I have a code word which I'll be giving at the end of this episode. You want to text it to the number 0488 45311. So set the number into your phone right now, 0488 45311, and get ready for today's code word. The Rabbi Jesus, who the scriptures of the Old Testament point to as the Messiah, the incarnate Son of God, the Savior of the world, in his 3.5 years of teaching and preaching, he made a remarkable statement in one of his teachings. We read it in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 24. He says, another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. So Jesus here is making the point that heaven is just like when a man goes to his field and sows good seed. Obviously, the implication is that you are expecting good seed to grow and to produce good fruit. And he is assigning that quality and that characteristic to the kingdom of heaven. He continues, verse 25, but while the men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. Notice very interestingly that we have a secret scene come along, an enemy showing up in a secret setting at night. While the good man is sleeping, the enemy comes. And what does he do? He causes pain. He causes suffering. He sows tares among the wheat and then he goes his way. Verse 26, but when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. So the servants of the owner came to him and said, sir, did you not sow good seed in your field, how then does it have tares? Doesn't this sound just like the argument that many of us have from time to time, myself included? When I was a non-believer, I would say, if your God is so good, or your sir is so good, and your sower is so good, and he planted such good seed, then how does the field have tares? It's a good question. Verse 28. He said to them, this is the sower of the good seed. This is what he said. Verse 28. He said, an enemy has done this. An enemy has done this. You see, the good man in the story who's sowing the good seed into his field and expecting a good harvest, he is not mistaken as to what the real cause of the dilemma here is. The dilemma is there are tares in his field. These are weeds. These are a problem. And for him, he's not confused as to how this took place or even why this took place. He is aware immediately. And it says, and he said to him, an enemy has done this. Now notice the servant's response. The servant said to him, verse 28, do you want us then to go and gather them up? So this makes sense on a level. The servants are looking at the master, recognizing the master went and sowed good seed in the good field, wanting good results. But now an enemy's come along and planted weeds or tares amongst all this good seed. And so their response is, hey, let's jump in and fix the problem. Immediately, let's jump in and fix the problem. Let's pull up all of these tares. But in verse 29, the response is, now remember, this is Jesus teaching through parable. Jesus is saying now, no, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Now, I want you to notice this important point in this lesson. Jesus is making the point that it was never intended that there would be tares or bad things growing in his good field, i.e. the earth. But when that came, when an enemy came in the cover of darkness and planted his seeds of terror and conspiracy, this didn't catch the good man unawares. He knew exactly what the real situation was. He could see the situation clearly. An enemy has done this. And he recognized that now the best course of action was not to immediately destroy the tares as they're coming up. No, 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 no. The best course of action is to let the wheat and the tares grow together. Give them time until the harvest. Let the fruit of both be seen clearly. You see, if you've grown wheat and grown weeds, you'll know that as they spring out of the ground, they look identical. And as they grow for a couple of weeks, they still look very much the same. You can't tell one from the other. They both are green and they're thriving and growing. Except at the time of harvest, the wheat has, well, wheat berries on it, and the weeds do not. And so it becomes immediately evident which are the wheat and which are the tares. And this is the point that Jesus is making in this teaching. Now, some of you might be thinking, Robbie, you're just reading into this what you want to see in it. Well, not actually, because Jesus doesn't leave us to guess. He explains it and interprets the parable himself. In verse 36, it says, then Jesus sent the multitude away and went into the house. And the disciples came to him saying, explain to us the parable of the tares of the field. And he answered and said to them, he who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. So pretty clearly, Jesus is saying that in the story, the one that sows the seed is him. Verse 38, the field in the story is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so will it be at the end of the age. So Jesus doesn't leave us to any imagination. He comes out directly and tells us what this parable is all about. He is saying that the Son of Man, he expected to have good things in this world. He planted them and he created them and he was expecting good things. But an enemy, the devil, comes along, sows his wickedness, and as a result, we now live in a world where there is both wicked and righteous at the same time. But the key in the stories is that Jesus is intending to allow time for the fullness of the character to be revealed between the wheat and the tares. Take away from this story, an enemy is responsible for all the wickedness, for all the evil, for all the pain, all the suffering. Jesus takes no credit to himself. He takes the credit for the good, and the enemy is responsible for the wickedness. Now, there's another story in Luke chapter 13 where Jesus heals a lady. It says, this is chapter 13, verse 11. It says, "Behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity for 18 years, who was bent over and could in no wise raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said to her, 'Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity.' But the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation, because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, and said to the crowd, 'There are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them, and not on the Sabbath day.' The Lord then answered him and said, 'Hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath day loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? So ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath?'" Notice what Jesus just did here. He attributed the 18 years of bondage and pain and suffering that this woman was enduring, he attributed it to Satan himself. An enemy has done this. It's not God. It is his enemy. The enemy in the great cosmic conspiracy. Now think of this for a moment. The name Satan literally means the enemy or adversary. Jesus is making the point that there is an adversary to God, and he is responsible for pain and suffering and sorrow and bondage. We take a short break now. When we come back on the Cosmic Conspiracy, we're going to give away the book, The Great Hope. Coming up now, Zach Williams, Dolly Parton, There Was Jesus.
If you have enjoyed this episode of The Faith Experiment, please help us get the word out by sharing our podcast with your friends and family. And don't forget to like us on Facebook.
Every time I try to make it on my own, every time I try to stand, start to fall. And all those lonely roads that I traveled on, there was Jesus. When the life I built came crashing to the ground, when the friends I had were nowhere to be found, I couldn't see it then, but I can see it now. Well, there was Jesus. In the waiting, in the searching, in the healing, in the hurting, like a blessing buried in the broken pieces. Every minute, every moment, where I've been or where I'm going, even when I didn't know it or couldn't see it, there was Jesus. For this man who needs amazing kind of grace, for forgiveness at a price I couldn't pay. And I'm not perfect, so I thank God every day. Well, there was Jesus.
There was Jesus.
The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen, right here on Faith FM.
Welcome back to The Faith Experiment, episode 58, The Cosmic Conspiracy. That was Zach Williams and Dolly Parton with There Was Jesus, and that song was for Christina, who requested that song. Christina, I hope you're listening, and I hope you enjoyed that song. Love that song. In just a few minutes, I have the code word for today's great offer, Our Great Hope. It's a special edition of The Great Cosmic Conflict. It's a description of how God wins in the end and how all the wrong is made right. So stick around, come out very, very soon is the code word to get today's free offer. We've been talking about the cosmic conspiracy. Conspiracy is a agenda to hurt, to harm someone, normally secretly. In the ancient manuscripts, we find that there has been a plot to harm not just God, but God's creation and God's children. And Jesus exposed this conspiracy by saying that it was an enemy, and that enemy is Satan himself, the devil. And he snuck in, according to Jesus, under cover of darkness and sowed tares amongst the good seed into the field being the world according to Jesus' own interpretation. Now, before the break, I mentioned that the profound thing is that the word Satan, who Jesus attributes all pain and suffering, especially that lady who was bound for 18 years, he said that Satan bound her. The word Satan means adversary or enemy. So Jesus is saying that Satan is his arch enemy. But the insane part of this conspiracy is when you come to the Gospel of Luke in chapter 10 and verse 18, Jesus gives us another clue and another insight into this cosmic conspiracy. He says this, and Jesus said to the disciples, I saw Satan. Now that's the enemy. That's the enemy that's at the heart of this cosmic conspiracy, the one who has sowed so much pain and suffering and death. Jesus says, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Now, this is incredible. Jesus is saying, not only is Satan his enemy who has sowed all this pain and suffering and death, but Jesus saw Satan falling from heaven like lightning. Now, what the obvious implications of this verse is that Satan was at some point in heaven, and second of all, Satan has fallen from heaven. And falling is different to being pushed. So a fall is normally of your own making. You trip, you fall over. If you're pushed, it means someone else was involved. Jesus is attributing in this verse that Satan has chosen to fall from heaven. And he did it quickly, like the flash of lightning. This is a really touchy point for a lot of people. People say, there's no such thing as a devil. Robbie, are you sure you actually believe that there is a devil, there is an enemy? Well, let me put it this way. I believe that the biblical manuscripts are a very good and reliable source of fact. That's why I'm experimenting with them. So far, all the experiments have proven to be quite solid and reliable. These texts teach, Jesus himself teaches, that there is a real breathing being called the devil. And more than that, he was in heaven at some point. Now, you can be sure that the devil would love you to be the last person to know that he was real. That's why most people today do not believe in the devil. People say there's no such thing as a devil. Well, you can be sure that he would be the last one to let you know. In fact, there's an old Chinese proverb that, or it's really a story, that talks of a day when a bandit kept stealing the crops from the people after each harvest each year. So the villagers set up an armed vigilante group to protect themselves, and the bandit knew that there was this new group of vigilantes, and so he stopped attacking after several harvests. And one day he found a villager in the forest, and he promised the villager great wealth if he would tell the rest of the villagers and that the bandits and his men had been killed. Now, wanting the money, the villager started to spread the rumor. Well, the villagers started to believe it, and they disbanded their vigilante group. And guess what happened the very next harvest? The bandits came down and stole the harvest, all because the villagers thought he no longer existed. You kind of get the point of the story, right? Now, in the ancient manuscripts in the Old Testament, there are two what we call portraits of this devil character, this Satan fellow. One is in Ezekiel chapter 26 to 28, and the second is in Isaiah chapter 12 to chapter 14. Now, what's remarkable is that we are told from God's perspective how this Satan fellow, this enemy, comes into existence. We read in Ezekiel 28 verse 12, it says, God speaking here, "You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. The workmanship of your timbrels and the pipes were prepared for you on the day that you were created." Notice this, this enemy, this Satan fellow, he was created. He's not a demigod. He is a created being. It goes on and says, "You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you so. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walk back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones." So who is this devil who warred against God? He was created by God. He was once perfect. He was in the Garden of Eden, and he was a covering cherub. That means an angel. And then it says, "You were perfect in your ways until iniquity was found in you." Iniquity is sin or rebellion. So notice that God, once again, followed his pattern. He created a good thing, a perfect thing. But all of a sudden, there is iniquity found in him, this sin. What was it that was found in him? It goes on in verse 17 and says, "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." You see, at the center of this rebellion is pride. It's self-centeredness. This was what we would call the original sin. Now, the second portrait that we have of this character in the Dead Sea Scrolls is in the book of Isaiah chapter 14. And we read this question. It says, "How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer?" So here, notice Jesus is reflecting on this, that Satan fell from heaven. But here, Satan had a name. His name is Lucifer, which means son of the morning. "How are you cut down to the ground? For you have said in your heart, 'I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the side of the mount of the congregations on the farther sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High.'" I want you to notice this. Lucifer, the exalted angel, becomes Satan, the fallen foe, when he chooses to exalt himself above everything else. The other angels, the throne of God, and even God himself. God does not create Satan. God creates Lucifer. And Lucifer, through his own choices, creates Satan. Because he desires four things: a higher position, an exalted throne, rulership and dominance, and ultimately, worship. And we come to the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation. We find in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 7, another dimension of this story. It says, "And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon and his angels fought." Now, this dragon is also Satan, described as the old serpent in the garden, This is the character that Jesus is attributing all the pain, the sorrow, the suffering, the death, the calamity, the destruction on this planet, the field, the world. He is attributing it to this being, Lucifer, who has become the arch rebel against the kingdom of God. And it is Jesus who is making the point that in this great cosmic conspiracy, Lucifer, Satan, the devil, the dragon, the old serpent, whatever you want to call him, he is the arch conspirator. So the question is, what's the point? Why all the trouble? Why all the hatred? Why all the destruction? Well, the Bible goes on and describes in Revelation chapter 12 that there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a great red fiery dragon, and his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. Now remember, back in the Old Testament, the stars were the angels. And here it's showing that this angel, he brings a third of the stars of heaven with him. It means he manages to deceive a third of the stars of heaven. By the way, when it says that war broke out in heaven, this in the Greek language is the word that we use to describe politics, politico. It is a political war. It's not a war of lightsabers and lightning bolts. It's a war of ideas. It's the idea of who should be God, who should be the rightful ruler. And so Satan manages to convince one-third of the angels of heaven to side with him in this great cosmic conspiracy. It continues on in verse 9, so the great red dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Notice that his angels are with him, and notice where he's ended up on the earth. He's no longer in the heavenly realm. His place is no longer found there. And I want you to notice, what is his chief characteristic as described here in this passage? He is described as one who deceives the whole world. So my friends, at the center of this great cosmic conspiracy is deception. And it's this deception about the character of God. And if you ask the average person on the street, hey, if you had asked me 20 years ago when I was an atheist, what's the character of God like? I would have told you, if he's so loving, if he's so kind, then why is the world so bad? In fact, in secular society today, we blame God for everything that goes wrong. We call acts of God, even in our insurance policies. And so Satan has done a pretty good job at deceiving the whole world in terms of the nature of God himself. So the question is, well, what's his goal now? Why all the effort? Well, the interesting thing is, in the book of Revelation, we'll pick this up in future episodes as well, but in the book of Revelation, the final stages of the great cosmic conspiracy, this great conflict between good and evil, we see an end-time axis of evil made up of three evil powers, or a dark trinity, if you will, a dragon, a sea beast, and a land beast. We see these three powers coming together and forming an alliance that will wage their final attack upon God himself and his people. And I want you to notice what it says about them in Revelation chapter 13, verse 4. It says, so they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And they caused the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he was granted power to cause as many as would not worship should be killed. You see, the pivotal issue at the end of time in this great cosmic conspiracy is the issue of worship. Think about this. When Jesus was walking the earth after his baptism, he goes into a wilderness. What was the three temptations of Satan trying to achieve? The last temptation revealed it. Satan wants the worship of God himself. That is the heart of this great cosmic conspiracy. I can hear you saying now, Robbie, do you mean to say the reason that there is cancer and AIDS and poverty and suffering and death and murder and disease and theft? The reason why this exists in this world is because Satan wants worship? Listen to me carefully. That's exactly why those things are in this world. And you've been led to believe through this great cosmic conspiracy that it is every other reason but. The longing desire of Satan's heart that fallen angel, the longing desire of his heart is to be worshipped. And so the question is, well, why didn't God just wipe him off the face of the earth? Why didn't he just destroy him? After all, Jesus is clearly seeing that it is him who has bound people with sicknesses and diseases. It's him who has sowed the bad seed. Why didn't he just wipe him off the face of the earth? Well, Jesus told us, let the character be fully revealed by the time of the harvest. Well, I told you at the top of the show that I have a complimentary book that goes along with today's topic. It's called Our Great Hope. It's a special issue that's filled with precise details from the scriptures and inspired commentary on how this great cosmic conspiracy will end. If you want to claim today's free offer, take out your phone right now and text the code word #FE58. Text it to 0488-45311. The SMS bot will ask you for some details and we will get this free book out to you as soon as possible. Once again, text the code word #FE58 to 0488-45311. Well, that's all we have time for in this episode. I will catch you this time next week right here on Faith FM.
You have been listening to The Faith Experiment with Robbie Bergen, right across Australia, right here on Faith FM. Connect with us via text message on 0488-453-11. That's 0488-453-11. Or send an email to robbie@faithfm.com.au and let us know what you thought of this episode.
Hello there, this is Robbie. It's a bonus. Just letting you know that I am on the road again in 2024 and I am going to be taking the Faith Experiment to various towns, capital cities, and regional centers right around this great country of ours. To stay up to date, subscribe to our Facebook page and check out faithfm.com.au/events. And let's see if we can meet up in your town.